Welcome to the Modern Girl Podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Parsons. I'm a certified holistic health coach, intuitive eating specialist, and health at every size advocate. Cozy up with me each week for empowering conversations with ambitious women as we share real stories around our relationships with food, body, and moving through life in the modern world. Hi. Welcome back. What a week. First of all, I wasn't even sure if I was going to bring this up in the intro because I don't even know if you want to hear my opinion about politics and things in general that don't relate to anything that involves politics for food and body image, which is something I'm very, very passionate about talking openly about, as you know. But I feel like I can't ignore what happened last week and the emotions that were really raised in our country and just the grief that everybody is going through together and just the sense of just a very, very pivotal time in our country's history. And as always, I'm sending you love and I'm encouraging you to take care of yourself no matter how you feel about what is going on right now in the world. I want to just encourage you as always to show up for yourself, put your oxygen mask on so that you can show up for everybody around you and really make decisions and take the step forward that you know is right for you. God, I know this is so vague. Do you want to hear about this or not? Can you come to my Instagram page and tell me if you want me to talk more about the current political climate or anything that's going on? Are you interested in my views in all of this? I'm sure you can guess some of them if you've followed my story or just know me at all. Anyways, this conversation is not about politics. It is quite the opposite, in fact, and it is really, it's coming in at such an awesome time so that we can take a break and we can turn our attention to healing and just lifting each other up as women and really focusing on what we can do in terms of taking care of ourselves and our bodies. And my guest today is just such a special person who leads by example in all of these areas. I'm actually just getting to know my guest, Katie Hake, which that's who I have on the show today. I hope that you love her. I love this conversation. And it's really great. It's almost a piggyback conversation off of the interview with Simi Bowditch from last week. So if you haven't listened to that already, please go back and do so. You don't have to listen to that one before this one, but they complement each other so well in terms of our relationships with our bodies, fears around weight gain, changing bodies, and fitness in particular. And that's what Katie and I talk a lot about today. Katie is a non-diet dietitian with over a decade of experience working in the fitness industry. Her goal is to help women stop measuring their success by the numbers on the scale, to stop quantifying and start living. As a certified intuitive eating counselor, she integrates her non-diet approach to help women reach their health and fitness goals. So, as I said on my intro last week, this is a perfect time to have a conversation like this going into the new year, being bombarded by all of these diet culture messages around just how we should be manipulating and moving our bodies in extreme ways and really just predatory ways. And Katie's whole objective is bringing you back to a place of peace and enjoyment and comfort in your body and really using exercise and movement as pleasure. And we talk a lot about that in this conversation today. We talk all about Katie's personal body awareness moment and her relationship with food, body image, beginning through childhood and what that looks like today. We talk a lot about the dialogue in the fitness industry and specifically the dialogue that makes food and exercise seem so transactional, which is exactly my point in the messaging that we're seeing right now coming into the new year in so many areas. We talk a lot about the feeling of just needing to look the part of a fitness group instructor, which is something that Katie struggled with a lot because this is her bread and butter. She is in the fitness world, and really how this led to the importance of compassion and just what that means for her today and how she really reached that point in her own journey. And we talk a lot about the stereotypes in the fitness world and rejecting these stereotypes and just going against that constant pressure to diet a certain way. One of the things that I love in this conversation that Katie shares is facing burnout through the restrict binge cycle, which, as you know, if you've just been following my story, that's absolutely something that I can relate to. And so we talk a lot about how we both went through that, but her particular lived experience with the restrict binge cycle is really, really so powerful. So I'm so grateful that she shared this part of her story so vulnerably. And one of the ways that we pivoted from there is really her practice of putting up boundaries and why that's so important and how that really was a catalyst for her to be able to listen to her body in a really powerful way. Above all, I love this conversation because it really highlights disordered exercise and really just puts the fitness industry in under a microscope. We're not really doing that in this conversation. It's a different conversation. We get into a lot of nitty gritty nuances in fitness and wellness in general that a lot of people aren't really talking about right now and that can really feel confusing. So that being said, I hope that you find this helpful. I hope that you feel heard and seen and truly feel like you're not alone in hearing Katie's story. She is so awesome. We will be sure to link up with all of the ways that you can follow her and connect with her and just get in her world, as well as all of the things that we have going on in this community as well too. So check out the show notes and enjoy this conversation. Please take care of yourself. And without further ado, here is Katie Hake. Katie Hake, hi love. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, just like we were saying, this is our first conversation that we've ever had, which are my favorite conversations because I have so many questions and I'm just really, really excited to dive into all of this with you today. So let's kick it off and start with the first question that we ask everybody, your first body awareness moment. So if you could just share what that looked like, that moment that you realized I'm in a body, this means something in the world that I'm living in, and also how that shaped your relationship with your body image and food afterwards.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to pinpoint the specific moment, you know, and I always go back to my story and try to think, what was the moment, right? Everything changed for me, but I think it was really a culmination of moments. But the one that sticks out to me was just being probably in like the fourth grade, right? And recognizing that I feel like I was one of those girls who, you know, I got about as tall as I am and my chest as big as I am now in like the, you know, fifth, sixth grade. And so I just remember I had to wear a real bra and all my other petite tiny friends are like, wait, why are you wearing a real bra? Right. And just that starting that conversation of, oh, my body is a little bit different and my body is bigger than these other bodies. And I think at that age, you're not really thinking much of it, but that moment is just the beginning and almost like the catalyst of the snowball that so many women go through into their future years.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you're saying chest size was your moment. This is a moment that is so common for women who have come onto the show before. And I think it's so interesting that it's that way, especially living in this culture where it's just this highly feminine aspect and something that's either desired or shamed. And you know, if you think about breasts, it's like these protruding things off of our body that is just kind of in your face. And
right.
Going through puberty, also one of the first things that really changes with our bodies. So in terms of moving forward with your body image, how did that shape or define your relationship with yourself? Were you trying to manipulate your body in any way, or was that changing the dynamics of your friendships or anything?
Yeah. Again, I think at the time I always think about just kids and growing up, right? They're so naive, but also in the best way, right? To me, it was, mm-hmm. it was a comment, but it didn't really change much for me. It just was, oh, my body's different. That's interesting. Moving on with my life, right? Wish mm-hmm. we could all do that now. But really for me over the years, it probably wasn't until high school that it really started affecting me, probably when I started getting introduced to exercise, right? Mm-hmm. Because then there was this, you know, well, why am I exercising, right? Well, I must be exercising for a smaller body or to look like, you know, the other girls in my class. And I think that's really for me, where my story changed, was when I started to get introduced to exercise and having different motivators for it.
Were you doing sports in terms of exercise, or was it more like solo activities? What type of movement were you doing at that time?
Yeah, you know, I'm a group fitness instructor and personal trainer now, but it's funny, people always say like, oh, you're so athletic. What sports did you do? Well, I didn't do, I mean, I did cheerleading. I guess that technically was a sport, but I played softball. I played soccer. I think I probably played basketball for a little bit, but I was never really good at sports. There was nothing that was ever my sport. So for me, I actually fell into group fitness. I joined, you know, YMCA at a young age. It was just like the thing to do after school to go, you know, hang with your friends and run around. And I started taking group fitness classes. And so for me, that was really, I guess, kind of the entry into, you know, hearing these dialogues around other women and, you know, from fitness instructors about different motivators. I don't want to say it was the only motivator, but there was definitely more dialogue of why are we lifting weights or why are we, you know, doing this class? And often that conversation or that those words that come about are, you know, because we want to burn off XYZ, we want to eat more cookies, right? And kind of, I think that started to really morph the, oh, exercise and food is transactional. And maybe in order to, right, I think that's kind of where the thoughts in my head and really the relationship with food and exercise started to evolve.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense too, especially being in that community setting where you just want to fit in and, you know, not feel excluded and participate in the conversation that everybody else is having. And it sounds like it was probably older women too, who you may or may not have looked up to just being in high school and at that type of, you know, class setting at that time, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's neat about the YMCAs, at least the one that I went to, is that there were all different body types, but, you know, I was raised in a house where, you know, we really didn't, my mom didn't struggle with, you know, she never really talked much about her body or nothing that I could remember, right? That negatively impacted. And so for me, I think it more developed outside the home, right? When I started to get into more of these fitness settings and started, you know, I remember another moment, my older sister, I remember finding diet pills in her, right? Always going through older sister's clothes, like trying to, you know, just go through her stuff, right? That's what little siblings do. And I remember finding these diet pills and going like, what are these for? And I think it was oh my goodness, Anna Marie, what was her name? Anna Marie Smith, Anna Nicole
Smith. Oh my gosh.
Is that a flashback or what? Am I dating myself with that comment?
It's a huge flashback. I remember her show. Didn't she date Hugh Hefner? Or am I getting that wrong? I know she was married.
I think it was something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. And then I totally remember, I don't even care to remember the name of the diet pills, but she absolutely had diet pills in this horrible commercial. And she was in like GNC and all of these
yep.
places mm-hmm. and everything. So those were the diet pills you found?
Yeah, I found that they were my sisters. And, you know, of course, again, that's just another exposure of just being around my older sister and just girls in high school talking about their bodies, talking negatively about their bodies. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a culmination of things, right? It's kind of this, the snowball starts to affect in the, you know, I think of like a rubber band ball, right? It gets all tangled and all these thoughts around what's true, what's not true, around your body and your beliefs start to mesh.
Were you and your sister talking about this at all? Like, was it the type of relationship where you were kind of voicing your frustrations with your bodies to each other, or was it kept separate?
So I am one of six kids. And so I mean, growing up, we were always fighting and bantering, right? And like making mean jokes, but right, there's always a truth behind just kidding. But so I definitely remember, you know, my brothers teasing me about saying I was fat. But, you know, looking back, right, you look back and you're like, I was not a child who I would say struggled with her weight. Do you know what I mean? But by hearing those comments from other people, whether it's your family, whether it's friends, whether it's, you know, people in passing, it affects you, right? Whether it's true or not.
Absolutely. And it's at such an impressionable age too, when, you know, in high school, you're like on the precipice of so much becoming an adult and really defining yourselves and figuring out what you're good at and where your values are and where your worth is in life. And I think it's just such a strong example of the culture that we're in and all of this fat phobic and diet culture language that's swimming around us without us even realizing. And it kind of perpetuates that vicious cycle and keeps us stuck in it and feeling disconnected with our bodies. So makes total sense to me. Absolutely. What do you feel like was the next step in your body image story? When you went to college, did it start to ease up? Did it become more tumultuous? What was the trajectory for you?
It was probably towards the end of high school where, you know, I started going to parties, right, and experimenting with alcohol and, you know, getting grounded. And so that, you know, at that young age, that was a way for me to deal with a lot of that stress. Or when my friends were, you know, they were going to hang out on Friday nights, I was in trouble. So I would say, okay, I guess I can go to the YMCA. Like, I was allowed to go for runs, right? And the YMCA was really close. So for me, exercise really became an outlet of,
wow,
this is how I'm going to handle stress, or this is, you know, this is how I'm going to occupy my time, because I wasn't never the kid to just sit and watch TV. I mean, I've never been that type of person to sit still for very long. And so that was a way for me to handle that stress. And so when I went off to college, you know, I was deciding, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Right. And I knew, okay, well, I'm really loving this exercise thing. I mean, I think it's fun. I love the way that group fitness made me feel, that community. I mean, there were so many positives that came from it, but it was a coping mechanism for me. And so when I went into college, I was studying dietetics to become a dietitian, but then at the same time, I got my certifications to become a fitness instructor and personal trainer. And that is when, again, I think things started to really change, because then I started setting professional goals of, okay, well, you know, I want to be a leader in the fitness industry, and I want to, you know, travel the country and speak at conferences and things like that. And so then I started looking at these other people in my field and equating body size with success, right? And in order to get this certain position, I probably should look a certain way, right? Because if people are going to pay me and hire me, well, I have to look the part, right? And so there's this pressure of, you have to look a certain way in order to fit the career that you're in.
Yeah. I mean, it's very similar to any type of aesthetic career, dancing, modeling, acting. We've had a lot of actors and professional dancers on this podcast before, and it does. I mean, it's so complex, and it really keeps us in this box where we feel like we have to build a relationship around our bodies to measure the success that we're trying to achieve. Talk a little bit more about, you mentioned you went into dietetics. That was your major in college, right?
Yeah, so I did a dual major. It was dietetics, but then also fitness, nutrition, fitness, and health. So I was taking the majority of my classes were in nutrition, but then my electives were all in health and kinesiology.
So in hindsight, and we'll get into where you are now with everything, but since we're at this part of the story, I'm curious, in retrospect, what were some of the things that you noticed at the time that were playing a role in this disordered relationship with food and your body, just from your peers and the setting that you were essentially buying into, just with the education and everything?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the stereotype that, well, if you're studying nutrition, then you know everything about nutrition, right? And if you know healthy eating, if you're learning about it, then that just must be what you do, right? And so I remember being in a sorority and people making comments because I was choosing a salad, right? And it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? People make these comments and it only reinforces that behavior, right? Because it's positive feedback essentially, right? Even though sometimes it feels like a joke, it's also like when we're dieting, it becomes this badge of honor, right? Of like, yeah. I am perfection. I eat a certain way, and that says a lot about me. And so I think for me, it almost developed in hindsight, it was almost a form of orthorexia, right? Or obsession with healthy eating. At the same time, when I was in college, I was working to be a fitness professional, and I ended up, you know, getting that position, but I started working with, I was probably the youngest of the trainers kind of for this company that I worked for. But then there was, again, even this more talk and pressure of, you know, people dieting down for photo shoots and, you know, doing cleanses and detoxes, right? And really manipulating their eating and really getting restrictive in order to prep for a photo shoot or a video shoot, right? Things like that. Because again, it was very aesthetic focused.
Yeah. And at that point, and especially hearing what we've heard from you in your story, it's your identity. I mean, it's so deeply ingrained in everything that you're doing in your life and how you show up and success and how people perceive you. I see this a lot with clients, and I experience this myself as well too, but it's like, well, who am I if I'm not the healthy eater? Who am I if I'm not the athlete or the fitness girl?
Yeah. And for me, you know, like, again, you can only live on that end of the spectrum for so long. I was to the point probably at my, there's two parts of it, right? When I think back on this time of my life, I think back to some really positive moments because I did love fitness and the relationships that I made. And there was, you know, there were so many pros to it. But on the flip side, I mean, there would be days where, you know, I was a full-time student, but I would wake up at 5 a.m. to go lift, and then I would go to class, and then I'd come back to the gym, and I would train, you know, a few personal training clients, and then I'd walk back to class, and then I'd come back for the evening, and I'd teach three fitness classes back to back to back. And so I was definitely just, I mean, overdoing it in general, right? Yeah. Just from a life and balance standpoint, but definitely over-exercising to the point where I definitely could have gotten injured, and, you know, over-exercising, which of course led to under-eating, just because A, I wouldn't give myself enough time, and B, the things I were eating were bars, they were shakes, they were, you know, I wouldn't consider them, it was diet food essentially.
Yeah. Totally. So how did that change your relationship with food at that time, just over-exercising and under-eating?
Yeah, it was this constant juggling act, right? It was, well, if I move more, I can eat more, right? My weight will stay the same. Or, you know, there were days where I remember I would, you know, be busy, busy, busy all day, consider a, you know, shake as a meal, and then go out and party with friends in the evening, right? And then the next day, what happens? You don't feel good for a number of reasons. So not only do I feel bad physically, then, right, that leads to the overeating. So eating all the foods that, you know, I would never allow myself to eat, but I was able to justify it because, you know, that all or nothing mentality. So I'd overeat, you know, eat a bunch of, you know, quote unquote junk food. And then that cycle continued, right? Then forcing myself to get up the next day and go for a run or go to burn off, quote unquote, whatever it was that I ate or I overdid, right? And so that cycle would continue, whether it was weeks, whether it was days. I mean, it was just to the point where I got burnt out. I mean, physically, but also mentally and emotionally.
Yeah. What was that moment for you, that moment of recognizing that you were burnt out? Or was it a few moments kind of strung together that led you to make a change?
It was definitely a few moments strung together, but I'll never forget, you know, I studied abroad in Australia during my undergrad. It was so fun. But even then, I was exercising twice a day while I was in another country, right? Like that, what a waste of time. But because I also turned 21, again, was kind of getting into the party scene. Every time we, with friends, we'd get gelato, right? It was kind of this all or nothing mentality. And well, if I'm going to allow myself to eat everything and really enjoy this culture, well, then I better exercise so that I don't gain weight. And right, there was this constant fear of weight gain. And ultimately, you know, despite, because our bodies are smart and they try to protect us, you know, I did end up gaining weight. And so I came back from that study abroad trip and I had gained weight and I was just, you know, sad because I was no longer there. And I probably tried that kind of over-exercising, under-eating for a little bit, but again, it wasn't sustainable. So for me, that was really the breaking point of like, what am I doing? Like, this is exhausting. It's not making me feel any better mentally. If anything, I just keep feeling like shit, right? And I can't do this anymore. And I found myself, you know, saying no to plans because I had to go to the gym, or like everything was revolving around my workouts. And, you know, I really can't pinpoint like what the exact moment was, but there was just this light switch that was like, what are you doing, Katie? Like this is not the way. And even though everybody else says this is the way, and right, all these people in the fitness industry who I was working with across the country, they're all dieting, right? And there's this constant pressure to look a certain way. I said, you know, I'm done. If I want longevity and this is a career, it can't be this way. And so that's where I just started to listen to what is my body trying to tell me? And that's really when I started, I guess you could say, my intuitive eating journey, but I didn't know that's what it was at the time.
I can only imagine the emotions that were coming up for you in that moment of recognizing that you just couldn't go on with this way of life any longer, being in a career where you were essentially admitting that this might mean a career change for you as well too. And so what was going through your mind in terms of making that decision while you were coming to terms with the fact that your relationship with food, there just had to be a change that had to be made, as well as body image and all of these things?
Yeah, for me, there was definitely, of course, this piece and this, I guess, internal battle in my head, right, of what my relationship with food and exercise looked like. But it also was these other areas of my life. It was me starting to put boundaries in place, right? It was breaking up with that guy who wasn't a good match for me. It was, you know, saying no to subbing every other group exercise class just because I could, right? I was all about filling my schedule if it was blank. And it was reminding myself, why did I get into fitness in the first place? And it, for me, it boiled down to, I love the way it makes me feel, the way it makes other people feel, not for the physical aspects, but for the community aspects. And so really tapping into that. But there was also a class that I took in my undergrad called nutrition counseling. And it was helping people get to the root, essentially, of their behavior change. And so I took a lot from that class and started thinking, what does this mean to me? You know, at the time I was working with personal training clients, like, what does this mean for my personal training clients? Why is it that we have this all or nothing mentality? Can we just start to live in the gray? What if we stopped thinking black and white and we started looking at all these other shades in the spectrum? And what would that look like in terms of actually making progress? That's not just, that's sustainable, right? Like making changes with our habits around health that we can actually stick to.
So I love that we're talking about this because it is it's going against the grain in so many ways in terms of just fitness in general. But moving into this type of work where it was more related to the root cause and building sustainable habits for your clients, what were some of the things that you were starting to talk about with them? How did you notice your fitness practice starting to shift and just those conversations?
You know, it really wasn't until, oh my gosh, I'd say probably the last 3 years that I decided this was how I was going to handle my practice and how I wanted my, you know, my future business to look like and working with clients. And so I think at the time we talked a little bit about this beforehand, it was me just subtly starting to change the way that I thought about food and exercise and how the way I would talk about it to clients. And so showing them a little bit more compassion when they didn't make it to the gym between sessions, or, you know, changing the dialogue that I gave in my group fitness classes, right? I committed, okay, I'm not going to talk about calorie burn ever. I don't think I'm going to talk about that in my class anymore. So I think it was just, you know, these teeny tiny changes, and it took a lot of trial and error of understanding what I was going through and what that looked like and what that felt like. And so once I discovered actually, you know, what was called intuitive eating, I thought, oh, this makes, okay, there's science behind what I'm doing, right? Like there's another way to describe that we're not dieting, because I think at the beginning I would tell myself that I wasn't dieting, but I was still always, it was still a diet in disguise, right? Like I would tell myself, okay, I don't care about the scale, right? That's progress. It's a step. But I would still tell myself, I'll just look at body fat percentage, or I'm still going to focus, right? I'd find these other parameters to focus on to quantify my success, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's so common. I mean, just the trajectory of recognizing that we want to get out of diet culture and then slowly detaching, because it's just so deeply ingrained in most of us. I'm curious, when you started to have this more compassionate relationship with yourself and identifying the parameters that were in your life and where they were showing up and kind of the diets in disguise, like you mentioned, what was the root cause for you?
Yeah, for me, it came down to my relationship with food and understanding why was it that I was making these choices. And what I really discovered, you know, of course, again, hindsight's 20/20, was that it was because I was using that as a coping mechanism. I didn't like confrontation. I didn't like, you know, feeling stressed. And so for me, it was much easier to go for a run and blame it on, oh, I'm training for something, right? Because that was a way for me to put up barriers and to put up boundaries for myself would be to put it in terms of exercise, you know, or with food. It was much easier for me to get home from teaching class and just eat whatever the heck I felt like and deal with it later than actually understanding, why am I stressed? Well, maybe I'm stressed because I've been working from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. and I haven't given myself a chance to breathe or, you know, focus on these other schoolwork or relationships, right? Or things like that. And so I think piece by piece, as I started to give myself more compassion with the voice in my head, with the people that I surrounded myself with the, you know, with the people that I mentally decided to take, you know, take a step further back from, it just came back down to, okay, there's other ways to cope. And really, again, rejecting that stereotype of what I had to fit into or what I felt that other people would think of me. And I think the more that I gave myself that compassion, the more I showed that to others, the more I realized, oh, my clients are still hiring me, right? Like people are still following me on social media, right? Oh, maybe people don't really, maybe people feel the way that I feel. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, again, just going back to that relationship with food and exercise. Is it healthy? Is it sustainable?
So key. Is it healthy? Is it sustainable? Sustainability. I mean, for anybody who is listening, if you're ever thinking about trying anything, that is the one question to begin with: is this sustainable? it just will save you so much time and effort and energy physically, mm-hmm. mentally, and emotionally. Right. I love that you're talking about the root cause for you being confrontation and stress. And I think that's so interesting because you mentioned earlier in your story, being grounded in high school and not being able to go to the parties and using running and going to the YMCA back then as a form of a stress release. And also just the confrontation that you were experiencing at that time. So that's an interesting theme in your life. And I appreciate you sharing that too, because that's also very common. And we all have those themes. It's never about the food. It's never about just our body. It's always much deeper than that.
Absolutely. And the people we surround ourselves with make such a difference. Like I remember still being in college and, you know, I would travel the country, like I said, for this fitness position where I would train fitness instructors. And I remember talking to other women and even men too. And the disordered habits were so common in the fitness industry that the way it was talked about was so normal. And so it took a lot of learning and unlearning and figuring out, like, what does this mean for me? How do I explain what I'm doing? You know, because people would just ask me, naturally being the nutrition student, right? And future dietitian, they were asking me questions like, well, what do you do? What do you, and I was like, I don't know. I just eat, right? Like I tried to just, it's just so complex and it's this web and it's interesting to look back and think on, you know, when you're in the thick of it, it is so tangled and confusing. And when you're working to, I guess you could say, to get to the other side, right? It's like this constant like untangling, right? And you're taking out one knot at a time and it feels like forever, but when you look at the grand scheme of things, I mean, our life is so hopefully so long and it's worth it because once you learn, you know, kind of this intuitive eating approach, you can't go back, right? You can't unlearn what you learn. And that's what's awesome about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm interested in hearing more about just the professional side of things because you've already mentioned getting past that fear of rejection and really coming to that place of understanding where, oh, people aren't going to reject me. I still have clients. And we're all the same. We're all going through the same things in some capacity. So how did it look for you in terms of feeling like you could still have conversation with your peers and your colleagues and, you know, it's just any fears of rejection coming through there? Were you able to find a new community in the fitness space that was more aligned with these new beliefs around food and body image, or was it something that you felt like you were doing on your own for a long time? What did that look like?
Yeah, there was, you know, I did a lot of work on my own and looking back, oh my goodness, I wish I would have just seeked out professional help because it would have sped up the process, right? But for me, the more I learned about myself and understanding what that meant to me, the easier it was for me to celebrate those small wins. So, you know, the small wins in that time period was, you know, like I said, saying no and not looking at wins as just, oh, did I eat a salad today? Right. Like looking at it, oh, I ate what I wanted and, oh no, I don't have to overexercise. I don't have to compensate for that. And it was, you know, things like when I was auditioning for this fitness company, it was getting chosen to be in a video and, oh, I didn't actually change anything that I did to get to here. Right. I just kept pushing forward with just eating enough and eating frequently and just exercising because it felt good. And so celebrating those small wins in my life, kind of these, you know, and is that the best advice? I don't know, because it's still affirmation, right? But it was different types of affirmation. Like, how can I find these other small wins and affirmations in my life that aren't always just a reflection of how I look on the outside?
Yeah, values. And I think that's one of the biggest puzzle pieces in healing our relationship with food and our body image is really identifying what are my values in life. And, you know, just like we've been talking about, our identities can get wrapped up in healthy eating and disordered eating and fitness. And it's just such a slippery slope when we let that lead our life because it just erodes the values. And what did you feel like you were able to re-identify with once you were moving through just like the tumultuous relationship with food? I know that you've mentioned like new friendships and things like that, but what were some of the surprises and the joys that you embraced?
Oh my goodness. Just this mental space, this new mental brain space that I had. I feel like when the light finally turned on and when the puzzle pieces started to click for me, I had so much more brain space and I was able to then use that towards my career and figure out, what does this mean for me? How can I actually help other people feel empowered and give them another option in terms of, you know, seeking fitness advice, right? Like helping women in particular, so I'm passionate about helping them that they can work out to feel strong, or, you know, they don't have to diet, and there's people out there who aren't going to shame them into working together. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think leaning into some of those mentors that I did find along the way who were, you know, in the public eye that didn't cue using these diet words or just focusing on weight loss and identifying, like, it is, for example, with teaching fitness, taking classes and going to, you know, conferences and saying, huh, okay, I like that. I don't like that. I'm not going to use that. And almost becoming, you know, my own version of, okay, taking bits and pieces of character, like values, right? Like you said, values and characteristics in a leader, in a, you know, coach or fitness professional, and reinforcing, like, okay, that is who I want to be. I may not be there yet, but the more that we can think about and identify who it is that we want to be, how it is that we want to feel, the more we show up and we step into that person.
Yeah. What are some of the themes that you notice with your clients now in terms of just the intention behind working with you and fitness? And if they are starting to work with you and you're kind of detecting more of that disordered mindset, how do you navigate that to one that's more compassionate and more that's more values-based, kind of like we're talking about right now?
Yeah, well, because I am in the fitness space, you know, I easily get a lot of people who reach out to me who are initially seeking weight loss, right? And so I find that they come to me and they're how I was, you know, years ago. They can't explain it, and it's really hard for them to say, but I can see, you know, even by them not having the words, I connect with them and I understand what they're going through because they share, you know, I don't know. All I know is that everything I've tried doesn't work. Mm. And I feel stuck. I feel, you know, in their words, I don't have the willpower. I don't have the motivation, but I just know I don't want to feel like that anymore. And I'm sick of the cycle, and I'm sick of this physical, right? Not just the physical feeling, but the emotional drain, the guilt, the shame that just feels like, it feels like you're just in this pit of a valley and you're never going to get out.
Yeah. So when you're in a session with them and you're able to relate in that way and go through the emotional pitfalls with them, what's the next step usually? Because as we know, it getting past that fear of weight gain and just not allowing that to be a goal and having a different goal in mind, that takes time. So what's the next step for people in terms of working with you, where you can just meet them where they're at? And also for anybody who's coming into work around or coming into this space and wanting to really move into a fitness routine that's sustainable, what's a mindset shift that you might be able to offer for somebody?
I think taking a step back and looking at, what is my history? What, you know, literally take pen to paper and write out your history, write a timeline and go, wow, what has dieting, what has this all or nothing mentality around food and exercise, where has it led me, right? And can I notice any trends? Can I pick up any themes in my life? And how has that been recurring? But then go deeper and go, where does it come from? And why is that not true? And that's the step that I think a lot of people miss. A lot of people just want to jump into the next thing because we want a quick fix. We want to feel better and we don't like sitting in the suck, right? And so, but that's, I mean, that's what we have to do. We have to understand our own stories and why, and whatever, all these, you know, different moments, why they make us who we are. Because if we don't understand that, we're just going to be continually seeking for the next best thing and looking out of, okay, well, it's not the right time, right? Weight loss is a moving target. And if we're constantly focusing on that, we'll never be happy, right? Because we'll never be at that size. Or once we do get to that, you know, quote unquote goal weight or size, whatever it is, there's always going to be something else that we want next.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that exercise so much. And especially around weight loss too, just going through the timeline and also just the fantasy of it as well too. What are you hoping weight loss is going to give you? And some of my body image training and the certifications that I've done around that, I love this one exercise. I don't know if you're familiar with Marcy Evans. Are you familiar with
her? Yes, she's amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. So my formal body image training is with her, and she has this one exercise called If Then. And I use this a lot with my clients, and for anybody who's listening, I think it fits into what we're talking about now. But when you're having that moment of wishing that a certain body part was smaller, to just pause and say, if it was smaller, then what would happen? And then when you come up with that resolution, going, okay, if that happened, then what would happen? And then going on and on and on. And it's a really interesting exercise that any of us can do, and gives us so much information about those moments of insecurity around our bodies or those desires for weight loss, because it's never about the weight, and it's so deeply personal for everybody as well too. But it's so interesting to think about when we zoom the lens out.
Yeah. And I guess that's maybe something that I was doing, you know, during my kind of coming out of this disordered time. You know, I had this goal of, okay, I want to be in a fitness video. And for some reason that was this, you know, I want to be in this fitness video because that's the goal. But the more that I started to unpack that and understand, like, well, why? What, you know, if you can always just keep asking that question, well, why? Well, because that's what everybody else is setting their goal as. Okay, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess because it's ego, right? And ultimately it came down to that's ego. Nobody really cares that you're in a fitness, right? That is all about my ego. And so I just kept challenging that voice of, why is it that you want to do that thing, right? And what that does is that helps you, you know, like that exercise you described, is it forces us to look in the mirror and really look at what's important, what actually matters at the end of the day. And 9 times out of 10, it's not about the weight. It's not about the gold star. It's much, much deeper than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is your relationship with movement like these days? And for anybody who is kind of scratching their head now, curious, like, do I have a disordered relationship with exercise and movement and all of these things? What are some questions that you might be able to offer to somebody who's kind of figuring out if it is unhealthy for them right now? What are some indicators?
Yeah, I think asking the question, you know, we can use that if then exercise, right? If life were to give me a rest day, how would that make me feel?
Ooh,
and so for
that.
For a lot of the clients I work with, if I, you know, let's say Thanksgiving is coming up at the time of this recording, if I were to say, you know, if your gym is closed, you know, or COVID, right? If your gym shuts down, how will that make you feel? And for a lot of people, that can really cause up some turmoil and some feelings of anxiousness and distress. And so, you know, that's one question to ask, right? If you were to take a rest day, how would that impact you? You know, another thing to ask would be, am I saying no to other activities because of I have to fit in a workout, right? Like,
yeah.
Or if you have certain parameters that you have to check off, right? For some women, it's I have to hit this certain calorie goal, or I have to hit this certain number of minutes. So if you're really rigid about that kind of schedule or routines that you have to do, I think that is can often be a red flag. You know, for me, exercise looks different but the same. You know, I would say that I still really enjoy a lot of the things that I used to enjoy, but I'm a lot more flexible with my approach. So I really wake up and say, huh, what do I feel like doing today? You know, I still kind of have these same goals. If I try to strength train, you know, a few times per week, but if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, right? Because if I wake up and decide, actually, my body really hurts, I think I just want to go for a walk today, now that's okay. Now it's not the mindset of waking up and saying, you're sore, too bad. You need to go do, you know, X many miles on the treadmill. Like it's that flexibility in your approach to hitting your goals.
Yeah. That intuitive approach. That's so, it's so parallel to our relationship with food when we move into intuitive eating and the flexibility and the self-compassion. And also I love that we're having this conversation because I think that a lot of people and myself included, when I started to kind of dip my toes into the intuitive eating space at first, I just thought like, this is BS. Like, I'm not going to sit around and not move my body and eat cupcakes all day. And just like, if I eat intuitively or if I move intuitively, I just won't move at all. And I'll eat whatever the heck I want, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting when we start to give ourselves permission to eat and move in ways that feel good. We recognize it doesn't feel good to eat cupcakes all day. It doesn't feel good to not move our bodies. And so our body, you know, we naturally crave that movement. And can you talk a little bit about that? Just this idea of intuitive movement and why movement is important to do, what the benefits are for anybody who's listening, and pairing that with a non-restrictive mindset or just aggressive tendency towards this rigid fitness.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many short-term and both long-term benefits to exercise, right? We know long-term it can help with our cognitive function. It can help with our muscular strength, our endurance, right? Life gets easier. We can get up the stairs without feeling winded. I mean, there's so many long benefits that exercise has, but short-term, right? Things like stress reduction, just having, you know, I guess stress reduction, but also a larger bandwidth to deal with stress or to handle, you know, tough moments. Mm-hmm. If we can find and focus on the benefits, right? The feeling, that's going to be a lot more motivating long-term.
Yeah.
Other than focusing on the food, right? Or how does this impact my body or food? And when we can start to explore these other benefits of movement and how it makes us feel, that's definitely a good first step to, well, what does feel good, right? Yeah. If you hate running, why the heck are you running every day? Well, no wonder it feels like punishment. Mm-hmm. Can we explore some different modes of exercise? Can we try a group fitness class? Can we try, you know, implementing a yoga class once a week? And what does that actually do for my body? And if we can remove kind of the stereotypes of what we think we have to do in order to look a certain way or feel a certain way, that can really be a big stepping stone. So for somebody listening, I would just challenge them if they feel like they don't have a good relationship with exercise, it might be the motivator, it might be your why, but it may also be you just haven't found the right thing out there, because I'm a firm believer that there is some sort of movement for everybody. And if we can replace that word exercise with just movement, how does that shift the way we look at just our day, right? Not just the workout, not just the exercise, but what are we doing day to day, week to week, month to month? That's what really matters versus, you know, the 60 minutes of high intensity that we had planned.
Yeah. And our bodies are so capable and they're so resilient and they're so strong and have so much ability that has nothing to do with the actual size of them. And I think that's a big misconception mm-hmm. for a lot of people that I walk with my clients a lot when we're on this intuitive eating journey together, is the idea, well, I have to lose weight to be able to move my body this way. And I have to be this size to have this type of strength or flexibility or mm-hmm. whatnot. And so for anybody who you're working with, who's coming to you with kind of that challenge or that belief, How do you usually address that?
Well, it's interesting that you asked this question, because this is a small but big part training. You know, actually, one of my first jobs out of college was working in bariatrics. So working with people who were taking the steps to get bariatric surgery. So for those listening who are, is she saying geriatrics? No, I'm not talking about old people. I'm talking about people who were having their stomach surgically cut, 9 times out of 10 for the purpose of weight loss. But that was, I mean, a population that many times, you know, physically had, you know, these physical limitations that prevented them from range of motion, or, you know, injuries that they couldn't move well. And, but that, I mean, it doesn't matter what your body type or your abilities, there's something everybody can do, right? If you are, not, you know, bedridden, right? If you do not have some sort of disease or something that prevents you, like you literally can't move, mm-hmm. there's something for everybody, right? But it looks different, right? And recognizing that what is right for you is different from somebody else. And so can we step away from comparing what movement looks like to me compared to somebody else? Because if we can remove that and remove kind of the standard that there has to be, we can start listening to what is my body trying to tell me? What makes my body feel good physically, but also how does it make me feel after workout? You know, I think, like, sometimes I'll wake up and I'll say, well, what do I want to feel today? Mm. And some days it's, oh, I'm just having a bad day. I want to feel strong. I want to feel empowered. I feel like I want to beat something up. So I may choose, you know, an Olympic lifting class, or, you know, doing something like that. Whereas there's other days where I feel heavy, physically heavy, because of, I may think I just need to feel like I need to laugh. And so I may turn on a dance class, right? And so asking that question, how do I want to feel, can help you go in the right direction of what that might mean in terms of exercise.
Mm. I love that question in general. How do I want to feel? Mm. Or everything in life, right? We don't ask it enough. And I think it's one of the most gentle points of entry with intuitive eating. How do I want to feel? And really just getting curious with how foods make us feel. And, you know, since we're talking about movement, how do I want to feel in terms of the way I move my body and how that makes us feel? But I don't think, you know, we're not really taught to gather information from what we eat and how we move our body. It's so performative, and it's so much more of a matter of looking at what other people are doing and checking boxes versus how things actually make us feel physically, mentally, and emotionally. And so that's such a great question, especially when it comes to movement, and one that I think a lot of people will resonate with. And feel empowered by too, because at the end of the day, what works for you doesn't work for everybody. And mm-hmm. that's one of the most important things to keep in mind as well too. Katie, I'm curious about your interpretation of men in the fitness industry. We've never had a conversation like this on the show before, but, you know, I think we're entering this new wave in food and movement where it is opening up a conversation to men and disordered relationships with fitness and the food choices and things. And are you noticing that at all in your industry? And I feel like so many times men just get a pass, you know, where they're just like, oh, well, I've got to bulk up because I'm a guy, and that can quickly become so disordered. But it's kind of just normalized at the same time. So what are you noticing?
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize, because, I mean, I have worked with many, many men in the fitness industry who definitely have had, you know, disordered eating and disordered relationship with food. And I think, you know, gosh, I can think of just some colleagues right now who are starting to vocalize that a little bit more and sharing their story. But it's such a stigma that, well, women must be the only one that have issues with this. But, you know, men are put on this pedestal too. I mean, look at, pull up any fitness marketing that has men in it. I mean, they too are shown that they have to have a six pack, or they have to have, you know, biceps or the certain physique in order to, you know, they have to look a certain way in order to be be that type of leader. So it's definitely something that should be talked about, because, you know, I always talk, I work with mostly women, but I do have men that I work with as well. And I have had men who have told me that they struggle with disordered thoughts around food. And it's challenging for them to even open up and have that conversation about how they do have negative body image, because it's so stigmatized that this must be a female only issue. But it affects everybody. It affects men, women, trans, I mean, mm-hmm. all ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I work with women predominantly. It's pretty much the only group that I work with as of right now, but I do think it's such an important conversation to have, to destigmatize the conversations that we're having around men and their relationship with food and body image, because at the end of the day, this is just a human issue. This is just mm-hmm. part of the human experience, being in a culture that is body obsessed, a diet culture that is impacting everybody. It doesn't matter what body you're in, what gender you are, what race, we're all in it together. And so I'm hoping that this is a corner that we can all turn sooner rather than later, so that men feel heard and like they have a space to be able to vocalize and make changes and feel that community in this as well too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where can everybody find you? I love the work that you're doing. Can you just share a little bit about exactly how you are leading your classes and your business in general, and how people can connect with you and all the things?
I love to hang out on Instagram, specifically Instagram stories. My Instagram handle is KT Hake, H-A-K-E, it's like cake with an H. Also my website, katiehake.com. That's where I share a lot of, you know, non-diet tips and also, you know, fitness from a non-diet lens as well.
Awesome. Great. And are you online? Like, are all of your group classes online, or are they in person?
Yeah. So interesting question. At the time of this recording, I have been doing virtual classes. Just because I haven't wanted to lose my spark. Like, group fitness has been one of those constants. So I am actually starting to do in-person classes locally here in Indianapolis, hopefully shortly. We'll see here. But yeah, for right now, that's all on my Instagram, and I post. I teach one class a week right now, but sometimes I just like to do pop-ups and here and there. And yeah, it's fun.
Amazing.
We gotta keep it interesting for everybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I just love that you're like leading this charge. And I know that especially in fitness, it's so important to have these conversations. And I just appreciate you coming on today and sharing your truth and your story. And I can't wait for everybody to connect with you. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I do want to share one quick resource for anybody listening who, let's say, they are trying to find something locally. There is actually a website that they can check out. It's called bodypositivefitness.org. I know something that's been challenging for myself, trying to connect clients with, you know, especially clients in larger bodies, to connect them with non-diet, you know, focused fitness can be a challenge. And so bodypositivefitness.org is a great resource to check out if you can find somebody in your area who is kind of on the same lens, right? And is body image informed and will help push you along this journey and not hinder some of that progress that you sometimes may feel like you're making.
So important. Thank you for sharing that. We'll definitely link that in the show notes, and we'll have to have you back on. This is an awesome conversation, and I'm just so appreciative of you and glad we were able to connect. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thank you to our producer, Stephanie Olea, our show manager, Shayla Anderson, and our incredible guest. If you want to stay connected and learn more about our guest today, click the show notes of this episode. And if this conversation resonated with you, please share it with a friend or leave a review so that we can continue to destigmatize these important conversations around our relationship with food and body, and spread inspiration to more women. One last thing, please don't forget to hit subscribe so that you can save time and stay on top of each new episode every week. I'm sending you so much love, confidence, and strength. Talk to you soon.